Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 3001, where Kurt Weller speaks to Bob Dobbs about media ecology, metaphysics, and life in general. Good evening, everybody. It is August 23rd, 2010, 3 p.m. Pacific time. It's a Monday, as the show is always on Mondays. I watched an interesting Ben Affleck movie last night called Paycheck, based on a Philip K. Dick short story, and I don't know how I didn't see it earlier, because I usually see all the Philip K. Dick movies. And it was you know, it was entertaining. I mean, I love Ben Affleck. I don't know, you know, a lot of people, they dog Ben Affleck, but ultimately, I enjoy a good Ben Affleck movie. There's something about that guy that's I think he tries. And it's good. It's a good thing to try to do good. This show, for instance, I feel is kind of like a Ben Affleck kind of attempt at a show. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Kurt. Great to be back. I want to check the time. What does your clock, whatever clock you look at, say it is?
It is right now 3:01 p.m.
3:01. Okay, and that's the computer or your system's time?
Yeah, that's my computer, yeah.
I can look it up
on that, the atomic clock time, if you want.
Yeah, could you check that for me?
The official U.S. time, let's see here, is... it's loading up here.
Right.
I don't know. It's taking so long.
It's okay.
I've got broadband. Why are you you discombobulated?
Something got out of sync, and I don't know if it's been corrected, and it just occurred to me. I think I was two minutes behind last week in general, so I just wanted to see if I need to call you sooner to be as close to 12 as possible, 12 my time. So it hasn't come up yet?
No, it's still loading. This is stupid.
Yeah.
I
understand. I don't usually demand...
Right now it's 15:03.
Perfect. Then my clock is synced up. And No, I was just going to say that the... I don't ask much of the Android meme. We have a touchy relationship, you know. And whenever I request something, which I hardly ever do, the Android meme will do its damnedest to frustrate me.
Oh, I see. So
yeah,
what were you asking for?
You mean in general or this particular occasion?
This particular occasion.
No, this time. I'm asking for the time. It's going to try...
Oh, I see. And then that's what was slowing it up, was the Android meme. Gotcha.
Yeah, they can't whoop me, but they make an effort to, and, you know, they delay it 30 seconds, a minute. That's all they get, but normally it shouldn't be any delay at all, but the Android meme does that with me. They say, hey, Bob, the Android meme goes, that dumb fucking Bob, he requested something. We can fuck with him. He never requests anything. He did, but what, this is the third time in 2010, but let's just go after him. So they pull out, they go to the match and start... sniping at me, and they only last 30 seconds. That's it. They're gone. They're like Pinky in the Brain, you know? What are we going to do today, Peaky?
I don't know. I don't know.
No. I'm saying that in the TV show, what are we going to do today, Peaky? And the answer is what we do every day. We're going to take over the world. Well, in this case, is what are we going to do? The end of our meeting says, what are we going to do today, Peaky, with Bob? Same thing as any time. Wait to see if we can hassle him. That's what they, don't try.
Give you a run for your money.
Yeah, yeah. They're so weak in their resources right now that, you know, they're just operating out of bitterness now. It's almost suicidal. It's a kamikaze operation. They go after me, and they know that they may not come out of it ever again, or come back ever again. Anyway, sorry to bring this up.
Okay.
I want to tell you. You have nothing to talk about, right?
No, I do. I'm holding something in my hand.
Okay.
It's the Rod McEwen box set.
Rod McEwen. Haven't talked to him or looked at his stuff in 40 years.
I never understood Rod McEwen, Bob.
Well, what part do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I picked up this box set of Rod McEwen because I thought people talked about Rod McEwen, but no one talks about him anymore. So I wanted to see what it was all about.
Okay, well, here, I'll just go by my experience. In the late 60s, he showed up with a book of poetry. Did he have a song out? What was it that attracted people's attention to him?
Oh, well, he did like those, kind of poems to music kind of, wasn't that his shtick?
Okay,
kind of like,
so that
kind of like you do, kind of like you do. only not as well.
Yeah, that's right. So you put together Bob and the name McEwen, Bob McEwen, and if you want to, you know, bastardize, you come up with Rod McEwen. which would be the Kmart version, which is about what he was. I remember, you know, semi-literate, non-literate people liked Rod McEwen. So the instant analysis is non-literate, semi-literate people admire literacy. They think it's a big deal to write or to make poetry. So you had Dylan changing poetry, obsolescing literate poetry, and you had Leonard Cohen coming in with another level, both altering poetry, and then McEwen altering prose, the way it was presented. Now, the average, you know, non-sophisticated, semi-literate person, under the right hemisphere effect of the satellite environment, we're starting to get a little interested in the aesthetics or in the arty art beauty world. Okay, so the Kmart or what would be in the States, I don't know, the Stelco, whatever Woolworth version of Leonard Cohen or Dylan was someone reading a book and thinking you have to have poetry written out, not improvised like Dylan and Cohen. And so they have this, they're really looking at the book medium. They're actually interested in reading. So their images of what's beautiful are very traditional, very conservative. So Rod McEwen meets that market. And then he gets daring, he gets real daring and reads poetry on an album. That's holy cow. You know, you mean I don't have to read this guy? I could just listen to him? That's incredible. So there's always those kind of people. Now, let me just finish this point. It then escalated in the 70s, 80s into New Age literature. New Age literature was the sensitizing, as Rush Limbaugh would say, the feminization of the male. You know, the male working class, blue-collar worker guy gets slightly interested because he accidentally had some marijuana and he gets sensitive to things. So then he goes to very traditional traditional stuff. And so New Age literature was what Rod McEwen prefigured.
Kind of like that Iron John kind of that thing?
Yeah,
yeah. Talking about like Iron John and all that stuff I've never read.
Yeah, Iron John, that's the drumming guy, right?
I don't know, it's just a book called Iron John. It was a big New Age men's book.
Oh, yeah, I think that's the drumming guy. Anyways, that's exactly what I'm talking about, you know.
Okay, yeah.
So Rod McEwen is that, meets that niche. And, you know, it's not that I'm not trying to say that people are, if they're if they're non-literate or semi-literate, they're stupid. Definitely not. McLuhan wrote in one of his books, bless the fast-talking illiterate. You know, he blessed them. But they aren't familiar with the literate world. They probably didn't do well in school, you know, flunked out by grade 10 or something, and just have no confidence with books. And so they have a very naive, innocent, youthful projection of what it is to be an author and a creative person. They would be shocked. They're the kind of people shocked that Dylan was using heroin to write like a Rolling Stone.
Right, right. So McEwen was kind of like a safe place. He wasn't as like
that's right.
Kind of, you know, kind of like chicken soup for the Christian soul kind of guy.
Yeah, and I never read any of his stuff. It's like either I'm psychic or I just know. I think I saw one of his books. I didn't even know he did music, but I knew I would notice the people who read him. They certainly weren't interested in what me and my coterie were doing. You know, they wouldn't understand it, and they didn't know we were the leading edge of poetry. You know, you know, if you don't understand that, then
of course, yeah.
you gotta have a feel for this. Now these blue collar workers, they work in other media. They work with plumbing and machinery and high tech machinery. I mean, you know, I'd hate to do that. I'm a retard in relation to that stuff.
Right, right, yeah. But you're semi literate, is what you're saying.
No, I'm super literate.
Are you paraliterate?
No, I'm super literate. But it becomes paraliteracy, paramedia. But I'm just saying that because I'm a super literate. Well, not because of that, but for me, I'm not into fixing lawnmowers or fixing cars or tinkering with gadgets. I just think. I just live in my fantasy world. And it's got to be always changing. It's got to be changing rapidly throughout the day. I could never stay at one activity like working on a lawnmower for, you know, 2 days trying to figure out how to make it better and run around and buy the things from the local Canadian Tire Company or whatever company's here. Now, I'm not a mechanic person. And I don't see I find mechanical people way more valuable than me. I mean, except for what I do in the Secret Council 10. But, you know, as a citizen, as a fake chemical body citizen, what we do, I mean, you need the plumber guy. You need a guy to do that. That's very valuable. I'd be all for paying them more than the professors.
Oh, totally, yeah. Because, yeah, like you said, they're needed. It's like architect versus an artist.
That's right,
like,
yeah.
Richard Serra said that, like how architects that call themselves artists are jackasses because one is needed, the other one isn't.
Yeah. And okay,
Rod McEwen did an album I procured recently called Rod McEwen Takes a San Francisco Hippie Trip.
See? And that was, what, done in 1985. You know, hippies been gone for 20 years, you know. That's real cultural delay. That's life in the slow way.
It was. I think it was early 70s, late 60s, but it's really, really, it's goofy.
Yeah,
he's talking about how this chick's making,
hash brownies?
No, what's that shit, what's that stuff no one eats anymore? Liverwurst.
Okay, right.
He's like, yeah, she made the greatest liverwurst sandwich.
it's his version of Suzanne. Suzanne Takes You Down, you know, that Leonard Cohen song.
Yeah.
That was the ultimate bohemian mood piece, you know, where Suzanne took you. I met Suzanne once, indirectly, by accident.
Really?
You know Suzanne? Yeah,
no,
matter of fact. No, here's the point, more appropriate. The one that Cohen wrote about, sang Suzanne about, lives in the Venice area in California and attended a couple of my lectures.
Oh.
Yeah.
Her name's Dan?
No.
I'm not familiar with that song.
It's interesting. We're talking about Rob McEwen and I brought up Leonard Cohen. On all Slack, someone started a thread called Leonard Cohen is God. They're very impressed with Leonard Cohen, and I commented on it. They're going on all convoluted and conscience-stricken about whether he could dare say that and other silly remarks. So I just came in. I said, I just said, Leonard Cohen was inspired by McLuhan. They both named the, they both contributed in naming Canada's first satellite. So I just told the facts. I mean, Cohen and Irving Layton, those guys were reacting to McLuhan. McLuhan was the real Canadian poet, the great Canadian poet.
Is Leonard Cohen Canadian?
Yes, he grew up in Montreal. There's a documentary on National Film Board. It's a nice documentary of him about 1965. It's really interesting. He's being the new generation, the new poet, the new prophet, and he's speaking at these literary salons, and they film him doing this. And you can tell, and he wanders around the street and stays up all night, you know, just sort of that late 50s, early 60s beatnik. Sort of beating, but he's going around with a suit on pretty well. And so you have this. And so if you know Leonard Cohen, you know in 1965 when they're making this film, he's sitting there going, "How the hell can I do Dylan? How can I outdo Dylan?" And right, this film is actually the end of literacy in the Rod McEwen sense, because right after this film, Cohen decides how to be Dylan or to respond, and he gets a guitar and starts making his music. And he does not appeal to the literary salon world that he was doing in the documentary. It's really the late Leonard Cohen. It's not accurate to what he was really thinking about at the time.
I see.
It's just academic people in his audience, and he just abandoned all that. And he went made that first album with Suzanne and got a hit in 1968, big hit.
See, the only thing I know is from I came up in the 80s, so all I know is like Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater. They used that Everybody Knows song.
Yeah, and that's a great song. That's a great song. Everybody Knows. That's what I talk about. Even Lenny Bloom, the stupid mentally ill Leonard Bloom. Lenny Bloom uses that song.
That's right. He uses it on the opening of his that Weird Religious show he does.
Yeah. Oh, you actually listened to it?
Yeah, it was. It was pretty entertaining, Bob.
Yeah.
That used to be. You guys used to be best friends, right?
Well, yeah, pretty close. I mean, I was his best friend, in the sense that I was very important to him, and I had several friends, but he certainly was a close friend because we spent a lot of time having a good time doing stuff. So. He mentions me in a recent show. Like I'm harassing him, sending him emails, you know, to he and his Mrs. Steele, you know, hello jerks, hello idiots, and put down what he's doing, and he in passing.
You do shit like that, Bob?
Well, to him, he deserves it. He's ruining my legacy. He's ruining my legacy in Toronto. Well,
how is that possible?
Okay, well, it's I have to read you some letters here. Didn't I read you some emails I wrote to him?
No. This is all new stuff here.
Okay, well, you did your homework. You listened to one show where he talked about the Bible and Israel and all this nutty stuff, right?
Yeah, and this is the guy, for everybody out there, this is the guy that made Negative Land hate you.
Well, yeah, they don't hate me, but they publicly since they work for Stang, they have to publicly do it.
I knew you guys were all in on it together this whole time. You slipped.
No. They don't know me. They tell people like Jerry Fiaca, cool people. They're less damning, you know, in private with Jerry Fiaca if I come up.
I see.
But I just, what did I do? here's the neat thing. It's interesting we bring up Nelson Thal. On his site this week, I went there. Do you know how to get to his site? Have you got a bookmark?
No, but it's Lenny Bloom. It's called like what, Cloak and Dagger or something?
No, you got to go to that channel. thatchannel.com. Okay, just go to the, didn't I send you the link? Go to the link I sent you.
When did you send it? Is it
Shock
Talk, that one?
Yeah, yeah.
Bloom and Steel. Yeah, okay, I'm right there, yeah.
Okay,
Bloom
now you're at
Steel.
The... Now, look.
Oh,
okay,
it's like he's doing an Avengers thing here.
Yes. Now, scroll down to August 19.
I'm not seeing that.
Well, it should be. I mean, it's... August,
oh,
I mean,
enter my name. I have to enter my name and email to be granted.
No,
access.
No. You're not.
I'm gonna.
You go. Okay.
I'm gonna enter a fake. I'm gonna enter fake credentials. Don't worry about it. Here
not
we go.
August. Not. Wait a minute. Not August. Not. Well, wait a minute. Just a second. Shit. Just a second. We gotta get you there because this is obviously a theme. Because I want this to happen, the Android means screwing with it a bit. Look, what the heck did you get to? Where you went and heard a link, right?
What? I'm at bloomandsteel.com.
That's not it. You got to be a member for that. You got to write in this. Okay, just a second. I'll read it to you. It's http / thatradio.podhoster.com. THATRAD.
Thatradio.podcaster?
Hoster, HOSTER. So it's PODHOSTER.
Podhaster?
Hoster. If I send you the link, will you get the email right away?
Yeah, send me the link. Jesus Christ. I don't know what I'm doing here, Bob. I'm like retarded. While we're doing that, I uploaded that song. Feast your ears, man. It's a short one.
Every time I get torn up on Sneaky Pete, or I wind up hitching rides to Sausalito. One time, this preacher picked me up and took me over to Sally Stanford's club for a drink. Boy, it was really elegant. He had bad trouble, though. His wife was leaving him, his daughter was shacking with a married man, and his son was AWOL. I had him halfway talked into Zen when this vamp type came by and said, "Don't I know you from Chicago?" She lived on the hill and played Mabel Mercer records. And she also showed us her tattoo, a beetle flying over her navel. It was a great place. And she made damn good liverwurst sandwiches. Only...
Huh? What do you think of that, Bob?
It's silly.
I told you.
Why do you have these things? Why do you have these things?
The same reason I have all the Leonard Nimoy albums.
Okay, so you bought the Rod McEwen box set.
No, I got it from the library.
Oh, just now. It's just your latest hobby, your latest interest.
Yeah, I thought I'd check it out because it's so kitschy. I like bullshit like that. Like the, you know, like that whole groovy, that fake groovy shit.
That's right. No, it's exactly what he illustrated what I just said. You know, more beautifully. I mean, he proved what I said.
Right.
No, that's fantastic. Anyway, first I've ever heard him.
Hey, Bob, I dig Sausalito, man.
I was hitchhiking once. I actually tried hitchhiking, and I made it across the Bay Bridge, and then I got dropped off, and I saw a stop sign, and I decided to engage the stop sign. Jeez, it was broken, so I went into the local drugstore to see if I could find a way to get around the broken stop sign, and... The guy at the store was profound. He said, "Don't take the stop sign literally. It doesn't apply to you. It applies to cars." This was amazing. So I bought a few bottles of Tylenol, and then as I walked outside, this waitress came in, and next thing I knew, I was reading Time magazines with her.
Well, now we needed a nice jazz. It was great. We need a nice jazz beat behind it.
Did she get my point and laugh? The next thing I know, I was reading Time magazines with her. I mean, what's that mean? That means you went over to her apartment and you got bored with each other, didn't know what to say, so it happened to be your father's place, and he had a subscription to Time magazine, so you started leaping through Time magazines like you're waiting at the dentist office. At the dentist office. That's the beautiful resonant of that image. Anyways, while we're waiting, do you get the link?
I got it.
There?
I'm there. I'm here, yeah.
Okay, so now you got that. That okay, now you should see August 19th. Does it say something?
So the ultimate repairer is on the way.
Okay, that's August 19th?
Yeah. It's got a picture of Obama and some guy. Like Obama's a puppet.
Does it have a video clip?
Yes.
You can, you know what I mean, click on it and you can look at them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it should be a video. See, it's a big arrow in the middle of a screen.
Let's see here. I know what a video is. It's loading. Here we go. Oh, that's him, huh?
Yeah.
For some reason, my bandwidth is really slow today, Bob. It's not it's the Android meme, I guess.
So what's happening? You can see it.
I can see him, but like then it just stops. So it's him in a blonde. That must be Mrs.
Yeah.
Steele.
That's Mrs. Steele. That's his girlfriend. So what you got there is Nelson's been on that channel for a couple of years. And in the first, just till recently, he had it all blurred so nobody could see his face, see what he looked like. But something's happened. He has made himself visible. So for the first time. So I posted this to Alt Slack last night. Let me see. I'll get what it is. You following me?
Yeah, I'm following you.
Yeah. Just sometimes you get.
I remember I'd seen an old video of Nelson from something where he was on.
Oh, the Tim Leary thing. Yeah, actually, from the Tim Leary thing, you can see him.
Isn't he like a big magnate or something, or his dad or something?
His father owns is one of the five families that owns the Toronto Star. The newspaper that does the most sales across Canada or something like that. So, no, they don't have the they don't have the image of him, his TV show. They don't have that. When I've gone there, it was there last night. He's taken that off. You see George and the dummy. Well, what are you looking at? I mean, how did you get to see him? It's not there anymore.
I clicked in and, there they are. It's him. He's drinking coffee or something out of a mug, and there's the blonde chick. It was better when she was blurry, but anyway, I mean that's a diss, but
right. You know. It has George and the dummy. Okay, so then you click on, so maybe.
But it's
it does
really
go
slow. It's like really low. It's loading up really slow.
Right,
so
but the
it's like dial up. Oh, there
right,
we go.
But it has a picture of Obama and George Soros?
Yes.
Right, okay. So I clicked on that, and then the picture of him comes up. That picture was not there before, but it looks like it's going. I understand you do still get it. So anyways, let's go into why we're bringing this up.
I don't know why. I forgot.
Okay, so you listened to it, and you thought it was funny. What did you think of some of the points he made?
Oh, this is a while ago, a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. It just seemed like religious, kind of double talk. It didn't seem like the old shit that he did that I'd heard before, that cloak and dagger thing.
Yeah, major emphasis on religious and interpreting the Bible.
Yeah, which seemed really kind of just goofy.
Yeah, it is goofy. So I posted this last night on Alt Slack. I said, Doug, meaning Reverend Stang, put this in your maybe logic course. You know, he teaches has a nostalgic course about the Church Sub Genius at the Robert Anton Wilson Academy called Maybe Logic. Do you know about that place?
No. I kind of wish I didn't, now that you've
said
that.
Right. So I said, Doug, I know he does in his lecture. He makes fun of me or Nelson or somebody. So I said, Doug, put this in your Maybe Logic course, a video of Nelson Thal, the man who financed your greatest embarrassment, Dave Neufeld's Bob's Mediacology. Okay? So it'll be the first time these people, I mean, Nelson's legendary in that world as the, you know, as a supreme jerk for them. So finally, they can see him. Okay, so.
Wow. Well, that's cool, man.
And so here's what Reverend Richard Skull responds to that. And he says, Bob Dean is Stang, J.R. Bob Dobson Philo's greatest embarrassment. Oh, okay, wait a minute. He's saying Bob Dean is Stang. He should have put in the apostrophe, S. Bob Dean is Stang, J.R. Bob Dobson Philo Drummond's greatest embarrassment.
Oh, see, because I heard that when he said that, I heard it as Bob Dean is Stang.
That's what he says. But then it should be apostrophe S. It's is Stang, comma, J.R. Bob Dobbs, and Philo's apostrophe S greatest embarrassment. So I think the apostrophe S is supposed to refer to all three names, Stang, Dobbs, and Philo. So then he says, living proof that Shatner was not a one-time deal with Canada. Living proof. So this Bob Dean is living proof that Shatner was not a one-time deal with Canada. Maybe he's making a pun on Shat. And then this other guy posts, he's called IMBJR. He says, oh, God, you are demented to think this Doug character is going to do anything you say unless it is, quote, please leave the building as I have set it alight, unquote.
Wow. So they just don't want to know the truth, do they?
They don't. I'll read that again. Oh, God, you are demented to think that this Doug character is going to do anything you say unless it is please leave the building as I have set alight. Now, they don't understand the secret relationship between me and Stang, and that actually Stang will greatly appreciate this, and he will put it in his course. Okay.
Yeah, you're not as close as you and Lenny Bloom, though.
Oh, no. No. I mean, Nelson Thal was a good.
Stang was like your protege.
That's right. Yep. And in a reverse way, they were my John the Baptist. They predict what I'm doing with Ion.
Ah, okay.
So, but the other thing is that, you know, Nelson Thal was a very good friend. We had a lot of fun together. You can hear it on the timeline. He's on many shows as Tom Rich. So when someone said living proof that Shatner was not a one-time deal with Canada, someone else says, ooh, low blow. I like the concept of Canada, but yes, it has had mixed results in its exports. Yeah, I know. That's what we're talking about. You know that.
Yeah, I know Shatner's Canadian. This is Michael J. Fox.
He's Canadian, Carol. Okay, so... living proof that Shatner was not a one-time deal with Canada. I don't know. So anyways, so then this other guy imitates me, another purple, even signs his emails, the great Bob Dobbs. He makes it look like it's me posting. So he has me posting as saying in response to some Joe Cosby link, oh, and second thought, maybe that's already in there, the great Bob Dobbs. I don't know what he's talking about. So anyways, we're talking about Nelson Thal. So, what can we say about this? I was going to read you the letters. Okay, I'm going to read you the letters.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I couldn't even remember what started the whole Nelson Thal talk. So.
Right.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, to get these on the episode 3001J archive, because one letter is in the globe.
I've been working on that site thing, so it's still under construction. But when it comes up, I'll do the URL and everything. I'll announce
okay.
it. Okay.
All right.
On.
So here's what
go
happened. I heard a couple of their shows over a year ago, and I was appalled at how Nelson was using my stuff, my words, my quotes, stuff that was in a newsletter he did. Yeah, lifting right out of my stuff, and I thought, this is all this guy knows. He can't say anything else, plus the Bible stuff. So I wrote a letter on May 31st, 2009 to him and his girlfriend, who's known as Mrs. Steele or Mrs. Jane Steele. There's a street intersection in Toronto at Jane and Steele, Jane Street and Steele Street. So she's naming herself at a street intersection, I think, Mrs. Jane Steele. So I title it, Time to Wake Up, because they're always talking about trying to wake up the people and everybody's asleep and they're the only people who could wake us up. You've heard them talk that way, right?
Right, yeah.
So I wrote, Time to Wake Up.
That was a big thing on the Producers for Bob was the whole, no, you're talking about putting people back to sleep.
Yes.
They were talking about waking people up. Okay, that's right. Okay, go on, Bob.
Yeah, his girlfriend has no clue what Nelson's referring to. She doesn't know anything about the background to this. So she might know now after she got a few of these emails, but I said, Dear Mrs. Steele, I mean you. Time for you to wake up. You seem to be a well-meaning individual, so I'm going to take the time to offer to bring you up to speed. I'm the, quote, person/mind, unquote. I'm the person/mind you're talking to every week on Shock Talk. So in other words, I'm telling her that she's talking to me, not Nelson, because all she's getting is Nelson's regurgitation of my stuff. So I say, everything Lenny/Nelson, Lenny Bloom is his radio TV name, everything Lenny/Nelson says is taken from me. It's just all scrambled like a broken tape reel, re-edited backwards or out of order. I don't know what Lenny Nelson has told you about me. Maybe he told you about my origination of the phrase Android meme or something. Perhaps he praises me occasionally, makes a little acknowledgement. Anything negative he has said about me is a lie. But that's not what I'm mainly writing to you about. Now, this is an aside here. They think they're Christian witnesses. Nelson always wanted to be the witness, the two witnesses in the book of Revelations. He used to claim that I'd be the other witness. And we go around testifying and then get killed in the public square of Jerusalem and then reborn and smoke Satan, you know, something like that, right? The two witnesses, famous figures.
What?
In that.
Really?
It took me 37 minutes to get my first what out of Craig. I'm a little slow today.
Did you tell me Craig?
Ew, did I say Craig? Oh, sorry. I don't know who that is. I told you. I'm a little off. I think this is international. I'm feeling this is international connection Sunday morning. This is the mood you put me into, Greg. Greg, I did it again. Okay, this is good. So wow. Even Carol's over there laughing her head off. Just so you know, Connie's listening and enjoying it. What were we talking about? Okay, Carolyn, what were we talking about?
You're the witness. You and
Larry the witnesses. In the book of Revelations, we go over the incredible, the translation of the book of Revelations is done by me and Ion. You know, we now offer that on our website, howionic.com. And we've done over 55 hours on it, on the 22 plus 23rd unknown chapter. Anyways, one of the figures in the book of Revelations is these two people are the witnesses, and they go around testifying about the second coming or something, and they get murdered. They get destroyed in the public square in Jerusalem or someplace. But then they regenerate. They come back, and they smoke the bad guys, right?
Okay,
that's the two witnesses.
I've never heard of that before, but
okay.
I'll take your word for it.
Well, you don't know the book of Revelations that well, right?
No.
Okay. So Nelson thought
that out of it. That'd be cool.
So Nelson got into Herbert W. Armstrong and all that stuff, and by 1984, and basically converted to it. Studied his Bible courses, and after a while, he decided when we were on the radio that we were the witnesses. We were going to be the witnesses. So I'll agree with anybody to keep him on the air, right? So so we were the witnesses. So now I know he thinks he and Jane Steele are the witnesses. All right.
Okay.
And they think they're the real true Christian. So I say, anything negative Nelson has said about me is a lie. But that's not what I'm mainly writing to you about. I want to challenge you, Mrs. Steele, on how truthful a Christian in quotes, you want to be and how much you want to live in the moment. Because they always talk about nothing to do but to live in the moment. I'd like to know how well you understand that we live in a post-information society and how if one is engaging in any kind of information exchange via any medium, then you are part of the problem. Not anywhere near a true witnessing, quote, witnessing in quotes. I suggest you have me call into your show, and I query only you, and you can query me without any contribution or interruption from Lenny or Nelson, Lenny slash Nelson. Now that would be an interesting show, perhaps even your last show, depending on how well you want to learn and how much truth you can take. For background on the Post-Information Society, check out any of these YouTubes, but especially starting with number 78 and any of the rest up to 262. That was all those, 250 YouTubes that Buzz had done of me that were knocked out eventually.
Oh, right. Those are good,
Yeah. So then I give her the link and I say, so if it is your wanting, now there I'm joking, I'm using ION language. So if it is your wanting, I'm here to answer any of your potential comments or questions. After all, I catalyzed the path Lenny Nelson went on since June 15, 1983, and I'm even responsible for any problems he encountered along the way, including any around Stan Lee's projects. That's Stan Lee of Marvel Comics. Sincerely, Bob Dobbs. So I wrote that, no response. Then they announced that they had an anniversary show coming up on end of June in 2009. So I wrote to them and said, so, Mrs. Steele, it's obvious I should be a guest on your first anniversary show next Thursday. I am your mentor by proxy, after all. I mean, he mentored her.
Right.
He's me, so, yeah.
After,
and I go,
yeah.
And then I said, and why the urgency? Why should I be a guest on your show? Well, I have Lucifer in a bottle right here. And I give him the new website we just made, the How Ionic, ION thing. So I'm telling her that I'm talking to Lucifer. ION is Lucifer. And I have in a bottle. That's why I should be on, because they're always talking about Lucifer. I have Lucifer in a bottle right here. I suspect you'd want to know how he's doing. Then I go, HMM, which is Marshall McLuhan's initials, Herbert Marshall McLuhan. Okay, no answer to that. And these are all sent to Nelson and her. And then I write to her 2-3 weeks later, more clues to why you failed to wake anyone up. And I quote Arthur Croker. Here's his quote, 1992, from his book, The Possessed Individual. Croker says, here, meaning today, in the early 90s, power is only knowable not as a form of coercion, nor as a knowledge vector, nor as a strategy of accumulation, but as a certain form of violent mobility, a logistics of fractals in which the hologram of the whole can be seen only in the indefinite miniaturization of the dispersed subject. Now, I'm going to read that again for you, Kurt, okay?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. See, they're going on with their obsolete top-down analysis, obsolete bottom-up. They have no clue about how to deal with the Android meme, and Croker is very good at describing what you're up against. Power is not in the traditional images of power anymore. It's a form of violent mobility, the ability to get around rapidly. That's all power is. Doesn't matter how much money you have, how much knowledge, how much you coerce people. The environments, the media environments coerce people enough. People wallow in them willingly. The point is to use the latest technology. If you have staged a coup and taken over behind the scenes, you need violent mobility. So here I'll read. Here is the Croker's definition of power. Here, power is only knowable. It's only knowable not as a form of coercion, like 1984, nor as a knowledge vector, someone who has the best knowledge of the latest technology, not that, nor as a strategy of accumulation. That means like you buy up and own everything. That's not power under Android meme conditions. It is a certain form of violent mobility, a logistics of fractals in which the hologram of the whole can be seen only in the indefinite miniaturization of the dispersed subject. That's a lot to think about.
Wow.
That last part.
That is a lot to think about.
But if you read Croker's The Possessed Individual, this is actually page 27. Go to page 27 and read the paragraphs around it to get an angle on it. I'm not going to go into how to explain that. But the difficult part is the last part. A logistics of fractals in which the hologram of the whole can be seen only in the indefinite miniaturization of the dispersed subject. You know, when you look at a fractal and it keeps fragmenting and then the image comes back and then it disperses and then comes back? That fractal... That fractal process is the indefinite miniaturization of the dispersed subject or person or viewer, the indefinite miniaturization of the dispersed subject, in which the hologram of the whole can be only seen in the in-depth. So you can only see the whole in a little fragment in the way it repeats itself. Now, that's the fractal. Croker knows that the actual condition of the Android meme in the 90s was anamorphic, not fractal. So the power people always go for the old environment, the old tools that everybody's living in the rearview mirror. Like, power is a Rod McEwen book of poetry. You know, it's for the uninformed people, not so sophisticated in training and their perception. They get lost in the rearview mirror. That's what power relies on. And to incorporate that, they got to be really speedily mobile. So it's a logistics. So everybody thinks they're a fractal. That's New Age literature. They think that there's the macro and the micro. They think there's still a visual space framework. There's the big world, and I'm the same thing, but I'm little, and I'm the little version of the same. And they can flip back and forth, depending on whether I get my phone call into a talk show answered, right? So that's the fractal reality.
That's some old school shit. That's like no one talks about that anymore.
That's right, because it's been superseded by the anamorphic, which is a distorted surrealistic image. I mean, you could think of M.C. Escher paintings as approximating that, but it's a trompe-l'oeil, tricks of the eyes. That's what's happening in the Android meme by the 90s, and Coker writes about that. That's why the fractal is in the William Irwin Thompson quadrant of my chart, and the anamorphic is in the Coker quadrant. Juggling all of them is the Dobbs quadrant. You don't get rid of the fractal situation, but obsolete power can only mobilize the fractal. It can't mobilize the anamorphic. Okay, so a logistics of fractals in which the hologram of the whole can be seen only in the indefinite miniaturization of the dispersed subject. So I sent that to him. I don't even sign my emails. I just send it to them, and I know she's not even going to understand that. Actually,
think she's reading that?
I don't know. Probably not. Maybe they click off anything from purple as soon as they see it. I did actually sign that one. I was proud to be associated with the quote. So then I sent, same day, I sent another email. I said, keep typing. Then I said, still more clues to your blinders. And there's some article, if I click on it, I don't know, CBS News. Joe Biden, we have to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt. So I sent this article. We have to go spend money to keep from going bankrupt. That's a Joe Biden. That's the digital Android meme economy. So I said, and they don't talk about this level. Nelson should. He learned enough for me to approximate talking about this, but he can't. So I go, can you take this article? Can you take it? The unstoppability of the Android meme. So then I sent another quote, and this is from Nelson Stahl's former friend, Tom Hennigan. He's one of these conspiracy guys, and Hennigan doesn't like Nelson's other friend, Eric Phelps. And so here's his quote. Nelson and Tom had a falling out a few years ago, and they wouldn't talk. And Tom Hennigan put on his blog that Nelson Thal was paid off by the Division 5 of the FBI, paid off, given $25 million to not relate to Tom Hennigan. He put that out of sight. When they fell apart, he tried to insult Nelson, smear him by saying that Nelson was an agent of the ultimate beast people, Division 5 of the FBI. And they gave Nelson $25 million. So Nelson didn't know what to make of that. And was surprised that this guy he said was the greatest journalist in America turned out to be such an idiot. Well, they actually got back together and did an interview or two last year. So I reminded Nelson of what Tom Hennigan said. He said, somebody named White is also assisted by British intelligence asset and Hillary Rodenhurst Clinton stooge, homosexual in the closet, FBI Division 5 informant Craig Oxley. So Craig Oxley, as well as FBI Division 5 informants Eric Phelps and Jeff Fisher. Eric Phelps is Nelson's present-day hero, and he's now praising Craig Oxley. So the very people that Nelson celebrates as the best authorities for understanding the present, he's sort of on and off friend, accuses of being FBI Division 5 informants. So I just sent that. I sent that quote to Nelson Herr, and I just wrote, "You idiots." That's all I said this time. So
are they gonna have you on? Do you think?
No. Here's what I did. Over the past year, I called twice. Sometimes I'm home and it's on live. I call twice. I call, and Nelson, the woman blocking, the woman, they call her Blue, who runs the studio there, she's been told not to take any calls. I actually heard Nelson. They said, hey, they said, is the phone ringing? And someone said, yeah, it's ringing. He said, no, we don't take calls. So I don't even know if I got anybody that time. They wouldn't take it. But recently I called, and she answered, and I was ready. I said, I need to talk to Nelson. She says, well, he doesn't take calls. I said, this is his brother. His brother. I need to talk to him. It's urgent. And she said, just a minute. And so I waited 30 seconds. She came back and said, no, he's not going to take your call, and hung up. So he wouldn't even take his brother's call.
Wow.
Because he's paranoid. He's there trying to help liberate everybody, but he just stays in his ivory tower and pretends he's having dialogue. It's so mixed up and contradictory what he does. So then what happened is I wrote, just scanning through here.
So basically what you're saying is don't fuck with Bob Dobbs.
No, here's what I'm saying. Okay, around March 2010, there was an article on the Fringe Conspiracy Radio in Toronto. People like Nelson Thal and other local guys were interviewed about the fringe media they do, or the conspiracy angle. And so Nelson's on there saying a bunch of crap. So the Globe and Mail, I think, the Globe and Mail published this. And so I wrote a couple responses on the blog. I sent a letter to the editor, but they didn't publish it. So I then just posted on the commentary, the blog commentary, or the website. And I did and I ended up having a bit of dialogue with Jane Steele. She says, it's after I posted something, which I don't have right here, right this moment. She says, it's great to know that we have you listening. That's what she wrote back on this so everybody can see it. It's great to know that we have you listening. So I go, oh, rest assured, I don't listen to your show. And so then one might think I have ESP, but not the case. I just have to remember what I said on CKLN 25 years ago. And I know what Nelson has been saying to you and his tiny, tiny audience. In other words, I just have to remember what I said 25 years ago, and I know that's what's being said on their show. And I've actually tuned into a couple of shows and got it verified. Then I quote what I wrote to her, you know, I'm the person mind you've been talking to every week in Shock Talk. Then I said, quoting that original letter, then I said, however, I am watching you here on this blog, on this commentary on the Globe and Mail website, and awaiting a response. As I wrote to you also on May 31st, I suggest you have me call into your show and I query only you and you can query me without any contribution or interruption from Lenny Nelson. Then I continue the quote, now that would be an interesting show, perhaps even your last show, depending on how well you want to learn and how much truth you can take. And then it's end of quote, and then I go, your move. And I sign it, Bob Dobbs, McLuhan Archivist, the Marshall McLuhan Center in Global Communications, Maui, Hawaii. The first letter I wrote in to the Globe Mail was co-signed by Mayor McLuhan, who was very upset with Nelson for what he's been claiming he was. Let me see. I don't know. Let's see. I don't know if there's just these. So then Jane Steele responds to me saying, rarely can any one of us know for sure what the machinations behind the truth really are. However, we can seek out the documentation, research for ourselves, and connect the dots to the bigger picture. So then I go, so who's telling the truth in the encounter below? And it's the Tim Leary Nelson thing that I got you to look at, you know, back in 93.
Uh-huh.
And I just say that. So then I sent on April 4th, 2010, I find Stang. I found the hidden show, February 93, hour slack number 379. Where Doug or Reverend Stang.
Hey, Bob, do you do this all yourself or you have people working for you?
No, I do these. I do these.
Wow.
I don't post on alt Slack. People working for me do that. But I do these letters to Nelson.
All right, okay.
These are me. But the our Slack.
Vendetta. So Vendetta.
Well, you'll hear my main statement in a minute. I predict that, okay, so on this February 93 show, where Stang is crying about the album Bob's Musicology, it goes on the whole hour. I think I got you to listen to it. I send this to Nelson, and I say, I predict the arrival of Ion, while Stang Doug drowns in hilarious confusion about my work Vision, which he tries to reduce to a lie. And then I go on about this and that. So I'm just telling Nelson, if he wants to hear, I want her to hear what was said back then. So then I keep sending little, when we got on, when Ion got featured on informationfarm.blogspot.com, I sent the link to them. I said, this you should know. Get a clue, zombies. So I just sent these short little things. And then on May 27th, this is the major letter. Okay. Dear jerks. Okay, mate. And I don't even capitalize the J in jerks. I have a capital D for dear, but a small J. Dear jerks, it's an asset. Now, this is why you're asking me why I listen. This is the issue. Now, he had Sherman Skolnick on regularly before Skolnick died, and one of the times Skolnick was on Mojo, I told Skolnick he's been obsolete since 1988 when he started being fed disinformation over the murder, non-murder of Mayor Harold Washington. So I dropped Skolnick in terms of taking him seriously, and he went all over the place. So here's Lenny, very proud that he had the Skolnick on his show. So I go, dear jerks, it's an absolute scandal how you two, especially Lenny, smear the names of Marshall McLuhan, May Brussel, and James Joyce. They're always quoting McLuhan, May Brussel, and James Joyce, or trying to quote. And I put in brackets, Skolnick dropped out in 1988 after being duped by events surrounding Mayor Harold Washington's demise and ended up being a silly associate of the brain-dead Lenny. What a fate for a once shrewd mind. I mean, Skolnick was a great researcher, but the information overload of the late 80s, he just couldn't keep up with it. He got fooled. So I'm saying you're smearing the names of McLuhan, May Brussel, and James Joyce, and Skolnick, but that's Skolnick up to 1988. Because after that, he really showed how brain dead he was by hanging out with Nelson. What a fate for a once shrewd mind, meaning Skolnick's mind. So then I said, I take this personally, because I left a coherent legacy in Toronto that truly stood on the shoulders of these giants in quotes, which they're always calling them giants. I see. So here it is, McLuhan, May Brussel, Joyce, and Skolnick. I left a coherent thing that you can listen to on the timeline, but you merely see, they always say they're standing on the shoulders of giants. And my legacy.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, my legacy truly stands on their shoulders, but you merely dance on their shoes. You merely dance on their toes, on their shoes, misusing their insights for purely provincial and juvenile motives muddled by the patina of sleazy so-called biblical scholarship.
Wow.
You are absolutely embarrassing anyone who ever crossed your indecorous path and unfortunately had a whiff of you.
Wow.
But that will soon... Yeah, now...
I didn't realize you could get so angry, Bob.
Who says I'm angry? These are words.
Angry.
Yeah, I want to sound angry.
So you're not letting the chip body. This is just your chip body.
That's right. That's right. Okay. This is manipulative fatty communion.
All right.
So, okay. So
I got worried there for a minute. My chip body got worried. My chip body got worried.
Okay.
I didn't get worried.
What? You think what?
What?
What was your last line? You think I worried?
No, I said my chip body got worried.
Okay.
I didn't. Yeah.
All right, good. Now, the Nelson thinks he's an expert on the Bible, but I have the actual guy who wrote the Bible, Mr. or Mrs. Ion. Ion inspired the Bible. Nobody knows the Bible like Ion. And we lay out all this Bible stuff. So I'm informing him.
What's going on with all this Bible stuff anyway, man?
Well, if you actually heard, I don't think you'll ever hear it. You haven't got the time or the money to do it, but it's absolutely unbelievable. You'd rather hang out with Rod McEwen. Okay,
well,
so the point is...
getting religious on me.
It's not religious. When you hear what the Bible really says, and Ion points out, it's the raunchiest Manichaean satire you ever heard of. I mean, Ion proves that the Bible is a Manichaean satire, especially the Book of Revelations. So, anyways, it would just slay Nelson's ridiculous Bible scholarship. So I say, you are absolutely embarrassing anyone who ever crossed your indecorous path and unfortunately had a whiff of you. But that will soon change as the real acumen of the Bible lays out its scintillating legacy and leaves you gasping with incredulity in the ghettos of Sudbury. Sudbury is a mining town in the heart of Ontario nowhere. And a trust fund baby like Nelson would never be in the ghettos of Sudbury. So that's the irony here, or the humor. And leaves you gasping with incredulity in the ghettos of Sudbury. Okay, then I give the definition of scintillation. From astronomy, rapid variation in the light of a celestial body caused by turbulence in the Earth's atmosphere, a twinkling. In physics, a flash of light produced in a phosphor by absorption of an ionizing particle or photon. All right, so there's the ionizing. So I had said, but that will soon change as the real acumen of the Bible, its real acumen, how relevant the Bible is, lays out its scintillating, therefore you find it has ion in the definition, its scintillating legacy, and leaves you gasping with incredulity in the ghettos of Sudbury. Then I give the definition, I have an asterisk, give the definition of scintillation. Then I say, now, I'm going to give you a chance to clean your windshield. Now, this is an inside remark, because Nelson wrote a kind of poem about me back in the mid-80s. He said something with, Bob has cleaned his windshield ever since he was 5 years old, and it goes on about how I clean my windshield, always keeping my windshield clear for accurate perception of what's going on. So I'm quoting that back to him. I said, now I'm giving you a chance to clean your windshield and bow out of the bottom-feeding excuse for civilian news you pretend to propagate. He claims, and you might have heard it, they say all of the news outlets, major or minor, even Alex Jones, are military news. Did you hear him say that?
No, I didn't.
Okay. You didn't. Okay, you would hear. He says everybody else is military news. Nelson is civilian news for you, the people, the civilian, the actual news that cares, even though he won't take any phone calls. So he says that he's civilian news, and he's an anti-environment to the military news. So I write to him, now, I'm going to give you a chance to clean your windshield and bow out of the bottom-feeding excuse for civilian news you pretend to propagate. You make even the military news look like the shortlist for the Pulitzer Prize. Then I say, for Christ's sake, get on it and develop an alibi. And then I give him the link to hearing all the Ion stuff. And I put,
so,
for Christ's sake.
You weren't lovers, were you?
No. It's like this. I'll talk to anybody. Nelson Thal, because he didn't have a regular job, had a lot of time to study my stuff. He studied all my stuff, LaRouche, May, all the holy offices. And in the course of the dialogue, in those wilderness days.
He was hanging out with you that'd be like bathing in LSD 25.
That's
so
exactly
you, like,
what.
You fried
exactly.
Up for a bastard. You had no chance, Bob.
Well, here's the thing. Now, Nelson and I, he did his homework as much as he could, and he focused mostly on McLuhan because he'd been a student of McLuhan, and McLuhan didn't mean anything until I told him what McLuhan meant. And then he saw all this other stuff and the conspiracy top-down stuff hidden in McLuhan. I mean, Understanding Media has 33 chapters. That's because it's a satire on the Freemasonic 33 degrees, okay? That's the secret part of McLuhan's writing. He was always going after the conspiracy on the side. So Nelson liked the way I put together the conspiracy information with a truly accurate perception of McLuhan's work. So he did his damnedest to help me in any way develop more McLuhan insight. So he'll talk to me all the time about it. And he's the one who got the copies of Marsh McLuhan's Finnegan's Wake. He borrowed them from Mrs. McLuhan. He's very involved with Mrs. McLuhan and helping her. And he borrowed for a weekend the five copies of Finnegan's Wake, Marshall's personal copies that all scholars hanker for, with his annotations.
Wow.
His personal annotations, including his son, the great Joycean scholar Eric McLuhan, his son and Marshall would go through several of these copies of Finnegan's Wake with different kinds of footnotes. And Marshall, in one of them, the one he did by himself, has his own code in it, which I knew the code. But there are some that have Eric's annotations, some that are just Marshall. But there's five copies. They went over it many times. Nelson borrowed it from Mrs. McLuhan. She wanted to pay him off for the way she was. He was helping her. So he gave them to me, and I Xeroxed them that weekend. So I got all the Xerox, and then we gave them back to the McLuhan family. I only had a weekend to do it.
Did you Xerox them?
I Xeroxed all the five copies with all the parts that had notes on them, and that was most pages. So it was a long project with my buddy Frank, who ran the Xerox machine on St. Clair Avenue near where I was living, which was just down the street from McLuhan's place in Witchwood Park. Nelson lived a little north of me. So I spent those 2 days Xeroxing. It was a small shop, so no one else was around. So we got it all done. And this is an amazing acquisition. And there's occasionally I refer to, if you read my essay on McLuhan, McLuhan and Holyopathic Quadrophenia, you will see it begins with a quote from McLuhan's notes. It takes page 254 of Finnegan's Wake, refers to McLuhan, or the language does. It's you know, clairaudience, clairvoyance, it's prophetic language, miming the future. Joyce didn't know this, and it describes McLuhan to a T. And in one of the copies of Marshall's personal Finnegan's Wake books, personal copy, opposite that page, he has written M-E, me. He knew it referred to him. He wrote me, Moonchild. And he was a moonchild, I think, in astrological terms, when he was born. And it's the phrase is Marshall McMuhan. The word moon is embedded in McLuhan or McMuhan. But he knew it was picking up him, and he wrote it in his notes. He saw what I saw. I can send you the essay. You can read the quote. You
can
read what
like,
he said.
This is like some that bullshit with Tom Hanks. Like the Da Vinci Code.
Right. Okay, so what was I saying here? But Nelson did a lot of that was a great.
I don't know.
Yeah. No. Wait, you mean you don't know about the Da Vinci Code? You want to erase that sentence?
No. I said I don't know what you're saying. You said what have I been saying? I said I don't know.
Oh, okay. Like, listen. Right.
Like Howard Stern, you know, he's always like I don't know what that means.
That's right. Yeah, and then Robin laughs, guffaws. Robin Gaffaz to the bank. Okay, so the point is that we had a very good friendship, and he pulled off these kind of things, like getting that stuff from Marshall McLuhan, you know, from Mrs. McLuhan. I'm indebted to him for that. Well, up to a point, the debt's long gone, paid. But we did a lot of interesting things all over the place. And let me see. Nelson was even part of the Dr. Beter gold deal with Dr. Beter in late 86, early 87. So all this stuff happened. And what am I telling you this? We weren't lovers, but we had a lot of fun. He had a good sense of humor. He did his homework. Now, here's what I wanted to mention. He would watch me interact with other McLuhan scholars. And after watching the effects of that, he came up with this formula. He said, you know, Bob, when someone encounters you, if they don't get you, they'll die. If they can't tune into you, they're going down. He says, you don't do anything, Bob. You just be yourself and you do your stuff, and it's up to them. These people claim they're looking for the truth or want to know this and that. If they do not want to go to where you take them, they will die. They will go in they'll end up in the opposite direction. So he used to watch all these people. And he used to list off all these people. He'd say so-and-so, this person, that person. They all died. I watched them interact with you, Bob. They all failed. They all died. I'm the only one who survived. This is what Nelson used to brag. I'm the only one who survived you, Bob, because I was interested in the truth and this and that. Now, he secretly felt he was protected because of the Herbert W. Armstrong Christian thing he was on. So anyways, when he cracked up in 2000, 2001, he died. He didn't make it. He bragged about it all through the 90s that he was making it. He made the team. But he spoke too soon. And his own prediction for everybody else, or his own summation, everybody else happened to him.
Caught up with him.
Yeah, he couldn't take it. He couldn't take.
he thought he could take it.
Yes.
Wow.
And he did a very good job of taking it for many years. For 15. He took it up the ass. He could take it all of it up the ass for 15 years. Take it whole. As Ion says, take it all, baby. Take it all. But what see, what happened is he was swimming, I think, in his parents' swimming pool, and something happened to his ear. It got infected. And it hurt his hearing. And he got a buzzing ring. And that buzzing drove him crazy. So he had to do some personal medication on it, and the personal medication screwed up his mind. I don't know if one's allowed to talk about that, because here's what happened. In 2004 or so, he got busted by the Toronto police. They raided his home. And you can read, you know, on the internet there's articles about this. They found guns, and they may have found marijuana. I'm not sure if that's – I think that's what's said. And he claimed he had a license for both of them. So I think the charges were eventually dropped, but it was really humiliating for his wife. But in the middle of that, he got divorced and or separated. I don't know if it's completed yet. But so there's more I could say on the personal level there, but I'm not going to do that because who knows what happened. So anyways,
come on. No one's expecting that anyway, Bob.
What are you saying? You expect what?
No, one's expecting you to get, you know, disclose too much personal. You know, we're keeping it clean. You know, this isn't like fucking Barbara Walters. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. No, I respect other people's and who are involved with Nelson, their privacy. You know, I'm just talking
exactly.
about Nelson, the media person, what he did in the media,
right.
He was a great student. Now,
yeah,
when he started going crazy when we were doing Mojo. And doing these silly things, I left the show. And that was in November 2003, first or second week of November. And he carried on the show for another year and a half. And we had a website for that show, you know, comments. And so I was on there making critical comments
was
about
that,
what he was...
Was that the Cloak and Dagger show?
Yeah, Cloak and Dagger,
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was this website called Para McClue, like Para McLuhan. P-A-R-A, Para McClue. And I was making comments on there, and fans of me were talking to me on there, and that bothered Nelson, pissed him off, so he shut down the commentary, the site. But what was I going to say about that? So, okay, now where does that lead? So he stopped that. Just a minute. There's a punchline here. Where did that – okay, so – okay. So he posted on the McLuhan list, an exclusive list for McLuhan scholars, he had a tirade against me and said that McLuhan was an asshole, you know, an antichrist, a demon. He took the biblical Christian line that McLuhan was demon-possessed, and he really tried to insult McLuhan and his family. And he did that. That was his last remark to the McLuhan world. And that's 2004 or so. Well, here he is. 6 years later, 5 years later, he gets this TV radio show up in Toronto, and he can only talk Bible stuff. That's all he knows, this perverted Bible thing. And so he has to have other stuff to dress it up. You know, you can't just have Bible stuff. So all he could do was go back into his addled memory and say old Bob stuff, my stuff, you know. And so
Right.
He tried to get in touch with me. He claimed that we could get on the CBC, but I knew that wouldn't happen, so I didn't respond. But I sent him one of Buzz Cosen's first YouTubes. This would be in October 2008. And he liked that YouTube and played it on his TV show and called me a great artist. Well, then he started getting these insulting letters because he didn't know what he was saying in 2008, but by the spring of 2009, when I write that first insulting letter, he's using my stuff, talking Android meme and McLuhan. This is after he said McLuhan was a demon, you know, 5 years before. But now he has to use McLuhan and watered down, screwed up McLuhan quotes to fill in content. But what I noticed is starting earlier this year, he abandoned all that. He still refers to it, but he now focuses on the Bible course that Herbert W. Armstrong teaches. It's all just Bible stuff now, and that's what you heard.
Okay.
But he'll even say...
So he's another cargo call, basically, of your stuff again.
Exactly. I've said that. He's a cargo call. He's a cargo. He's got all this stuff. Now, what's funny is that lately...
He's like the anti-Stang.
Hmm.
He's like on one end and Stang's on the other end.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I agree. So, and you know that image of J.R. Bob Dobbs. He's in the middle and he's pickpocketing both the right and the left. Well, I'm in the middle, pickpocketing Nelson and pickpocketing Stang. You know.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
The real
so,
deal.
Yes. So the he's using the Bible more and more, but because he gets sort of bored with it, and he has to say some other words. He can't be blatantly obvious or something, though he is pretty obvious. It's ridiculous now. But so every now and then he'll go, the Android meme, or Rai returned to essence. He actually said recently, Rai turned to essence. Now, that's a very esoteric cosmic awareness thing to say. He said Rai without explaining it, and his girlfriend doesn't even care what he says. It doesn't know what to say. And so then, let me see, in my archives here... let's see, we would go down here. Something very interesting happened very recently. By the way, Carolyn had her first column in the Huffington Post yesterday, August 22nd.
Really? On the 22nd? Look at that.
Yeah. I'll send it to you. You can read what she writes. And it's like it's a section called Living. So they don't have much on health, but they just have a few doctors. So Carolyn did her first column. And within 4 hours, they had like 200 comments, and the other doctors had 3 comments. But she attracts them. As soon as she shows up, they just start running in there. And, you know, it's all a bunch of silly commentary, pro and con and all that, but they do it. Okay, what's this? Here it is. You can listen to the July 15th show. In his archives, at 52 minutes and 53 seconds, he just says, Rai returned to essence. They're talking about ecology and ecofascism and Gaia. She says something about Gaia. She has a little bit of New Age terminology. And he goes, yeah, Rai returned to essence. She doesn't ask him what he means. He just blurts it out like a jukebox, you know. It's like free association. And you have to know why he's saying that. So then on July 22nd, he actually goes into themes that Carol and I and Ion were doing in the Book of Revelations. He doesn't know we're doing it, but there's this weird synchronicity. There is a weird psychic synchronicity between he and I. He'll mention something that I'm doing that week, though he doesn't know it. All right? So that happened on the July 22nd show at 16 minutes and 6 hours. 16 minutes. He does it at 6 hours before we do. He picks up on it. Okay, so the next one, let me see, the next one is, I hope I find it, here it is, August 5th, okay, you can listen to this, August 5th, 2010 show, at 28 minutes and 20 seconds, he's talking about the secret elite. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm right here,
okay.
Bob.
I'm just used to lines dropping off. Okay, he says, he's talking about the secret world, who runs the world and all that. And he says, the secret council of 10. He just says that, like his jukebox mind blurts that out, secret council of 10. And his girlfriend laughs, giggles. So write that note. He goes, secret council of 10. She stops talking and hears it. And then he says, you know, I used to know a character who claimed he was a member of the Secret Council of 10. He was. Then it turned out he was a put-on artist. He, He's just an egomaniac, just a big egomaniac. And she starts snickering because she knows who he's referring to and knows the letters. And that was the proof to me that they're talking about the email. Because the way she laughed when, and she wouldn't say who I was. This is what he says. Yeah, there's a Secret Council 10. Oh, yeah, Secret Council 10. I used to know a person who claimed he was a head of the Secret Council 10, but it turned out he was just a put-on artist. Just an egomaniac, just an egomaniac. And that's the passing remark to me on August 5th. So go listen to it. You excerpt it, and we will loop it here. Let's loop it on our show. It's one of our sound bites. Maybe I'll loop it.
I can anyway. Yeah, you know, if you tell me to do it, I'll loop it by next year.
Yes, that's right. So what?
All I have to do is listen back. You told me what minute it's at, right? It's August 5th.
2010 at 28 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah, I can do that. August 5th,
28-minute mark. That's when you start listening. It'll just come up just after, just into the 28th minute, going to the 29th minute.
Now, will I be able to access that, or do you have to send me the link?
No, it's right there in their archives. I don't know if you can download the stuff, right? You download it, and then you have your own copy. Maybe
okay.
I'll get Steve Reimer to do it. He knows how to download the stuff and then work with it, edit it, excerpt. But the point is that was August 5th. Sometime in July, I got an email from Andrew Crystal, and Nelson had got YouTube to go to Andrew Crystal's site, called Joe Sloan Channel, and say we don't have the right to play Everything's Disappeared, that really good video I made with Nelson in January 93. I think you've seen it with me floating around dancing in the bubble.
Yeah, dancing. Yeah, you're dancing.
Yeah. Yeah, so Andrew gets an email because it was I gave it to Andrew when I was visiting him in New Zealand in December 2007. He downloaded it and put it up on a little website we called the Joe Dunn Sloan Channel, because it's named after one of the makers of the D-Cell, Joe Dunn Sloan. So anyway, so there it was, and it sat there for almost 3 years until last month Nelson's people or himself informed YouTube that we did not have the right to have that on our site. And he was totally right. It was his thing. He owns it. I don't own it or anything. I just had a copy, so I was able to give it to Andrew. So Nelson withdrew it from our site, so we don't have it anymore. So that was the only way he could lash out at me after I was sending these Dear Jerks letters.
Wow, that's cold, man.
Nah, doesn't matter.
That's
it's
cold.
A nice video. It's a nice video, but we're producing so much new stuff now, it doesn't matter. Did you say cold? C-O-L-D?
Yeah, cold, man. That's cold.
Oh, he's trying
that's
to be, but... it's not
that's
cold to me. We don't care.
That's what we used to say back in the day, man. That's what we used to say back in the day. Like, that's cold.
That's
man.
Cold. Well, you know, McLuhan wrote an article for Playboy in the December 1968 issue. You can look it up. Find an old back issue. It's a beautiful, well-designed thing. And it says, mind your media, men, or you'll catch a cold environment.
Wow.
Now, you being born around that time.
You
being born around that time lived in fear of the cold environment as kids, picked up on it. And so that's why your term of concern is, that's cold, man. That's what McLuhan predicted. We're heading into a cold environment.
That's what I actually used to say. I used to, when I was a kid, I go, that's cold. That's cold, man. That's what McLuhan predicted.
Excellent.
Exactly.
See, that is our Zanarchy for the day. You know, you brought that phrase up. I gave you the source, and then you remembered you did it when you were a kid. Perfect, perfect. We did it. That's
wonderful.
It. I love it.
Wonderful.
So let me see. I'm going to try to find the letter I wrote to the Globe and Mail, a little more detailed about Nelson. I have to find the person I forwarded to. Because I don't have a direct copy of it. I have to go through someone else. So that would have been in March. Ah. Okay, here it is. All right. So I wrote this. This is what's posted on the site. Now, when you post on these commentaries on the Globe and Mail, they have people vote on you. So people say, oh, too negative, and they put a thumbs down thing. Or if they like it, thumbs up, all right? So people can vote the moral or ethical qualities of the letter. So I posted this letter, and it zoomed ahead with, you know, 5 or 7 ups and no downs. And then within a day, there was like 10 downs and 7 ups. My gang had no more were really, I don't know if I told anybody, but there was a couple people who knew it, and they might have voted, I don't know. But there were some. Nelson zoomed ahead because he got all his clones to, imagine that, cloning the brain-dead Lenny. Holy jeez, what would that? Anyways, he got these people to swarm on there and claim that I was negative. You know, they made the vote go against me. But I just noticed that. It didn't matter because they take the thing off the site after a couple of weeks, and I don't know, you got to be a member or pay something to find the article. So here's what I wrote. Dear Emile Smith Bowles, I spoke to her. She was the editor of this stuff. And the article is written by Nelson's friend, Michael Posner. I say, regarding the article called, quote, Are Conspiracy Theorists Infiltrating the Media? By Michael Posner, February 20th. Now, February 20th, that's February is the second month. That's 2-2. February 20th, 2-2. And it was the day I interviewed Beter in March 1986 that led to the gold deal and Nelson being very excited. Okay, so here's what I say. Nelson Thal wants to wake up the people. To what? Well, to Mr. Thal's propaganda based on a facile interpretation of the King James Version of the Bible in general and on the agenda of the late Herbert W. Armstrong's Worldwide Church of God in particular. Thal wants us to imbibe such revelatory notions as that Canada is Israel. You might recall that kind of talk when you heard it, this thing about America being Israel.
No, that's crazy. I like that, though. I like that kind of talk.
Oh yeah, well you like the burnt out Rod McEwen meme, you know you like that.
Yeah, I do, man. Yeah. It's I find it it's fun.
Well, this is what I do. I listen to Nelson like you listen to Rod McEwen. It's fun. I'm that kind of stuff always puts me in an analytical mind. It's like McLuhan said, even when I'm in a bad movie, I see patterns. This stuff helps me see patterns.
Right, it's like a bad movie. That's why I like bad movies. Yes.
Well, you get patterns. You're so detached from it. It puts you in a detached state of viewing. If you like it, you're all involved and excited by it. But if you don't like it and you know how to look at it, you can start using it as just mere fodder, like hanging out at a Starbucks and watching people's behavior and thinking up patterns. You do that with bad stuff. It makes you so detached, you look at the subplot of what's going on. It's actually the best way to study, which is what you're doing, Kurt. See, it's good that you listen to Rod McEwen if you use it for that effect.
Right. You're right, Bob.
Yeah.
I should thank Mr. McEwen.
You should what?
I should thank him.
Yeah. No, I mean, what would you write to him? Love your stuff. They'd arrest me if they knew what I thought as I listened to it. Please send more. Please do more, Rod.
Yeah.
Okay, so I listen to Nelson for that effect because I'm watching how someone got destroyed by my information. Do you know what I mean? It's a good clinical case of listening to how he blurts out this stuff and does not explain it and how he thinks it's great and makes him look hip or something and watching how it's all botched. You know, that's what I'm doing.
Right.
I'm studying a patient who died. I'm sorry.
You're doing an autopsy.
That's right. I used to call my whole C. Kellan Enterprise forensic archives. You know, it's forensic research. Forensic is studying the corpse. I was studying the corpse of the chemical body and the TV body and eventually the android meme. I've always doing that. We're doing that right now, doing forensics. So I go,
You're like Quincy.
Yes, that's right. I list that. Ion mentioned that TV show in a certain context recently. Thal wants us to imbibe such revelatory notions as that Canada is Israel. All his so-called spy versus spy sleuthing into the intrigues of secret societies has led to this one conclusion, believe it or not. All his sleuthing has led to the conclusion that Canada is Israel in the Bible. And to make And to make matters even more absurd, there is not one tragedy coming to Canada slash Israel. I have that in quotes. And to make matters even more absurd, there's not one tragedy coming to... Oh, we didn't make it.
No, we're still there.
Who's playing? Oh, my... It's coming out of my speaker. I thought we'd gone into cut-off music thing, and it suddenly clicked in. You know, I've been downloading it for 15 minutes, and it suddenly clicked in. Okay, I'm going to stop it. But the funny thing is I thought... It was the soundtrack of us, you know, the phone music and whatever. We got cut off, but I didn't notice that it was in my headphones, which are for the computer, which is sitting over across the room. Anyways, it's not in these headphones I'm using right now. So it says, and to make matters even more absurd, there's not one tragedy coming to Canada slash Israel that Thal has not predicted. He's predicting all the tragedies that are coming. So much so that his recent podcasts have nothing to expose now but this 25-year-long subliminal message. Then I say, I should know. I gave him his first opportunity to air this suppressed secret on CKLN FM on October 1st, 1984. And I put secret in quotes. Then I say, Thal asserts that he was Marshall McLuhan's archivist in quotes. Yet he fails to let his listeners hear the one brilliant insight McLuhan discovered regarding his own interest in secret societies. And this is the insight. That the centrifugal speeds of electronic and digital media ensure that no bureaucratic factional infighting can realize its precious hegemony. All the Pope's men can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Oh, unless they kneel to the Sabbath on Saturday, not Sunday. See, that's Herbert W. Armstrong's answer. If we all observed the Sabbath on Saturday, all would be healed. The world's problems would
really?
Be solved. That's the solution. And Nelson will say it every now and then. Got to listen closely, but he'll say it. Then I say, one would think that Michael Posner, the guy who wrote the article, one would think that Michael Posner, a longtime friend of Thal, would at least glean this insight of McLuhan's from Thal the archivist when pondering the conspiracy mania in Toronto's fringe media. In other words, I'm saying Posner could have been told this McLuhan insight by Nelson if Nelson was still alive, if Nelson remembered what I taught him. He could have pointed this out, but he doesn't. He falls back into the conspiracy mongering. So he says, so I say, I'll read that again, now you know what I mean. One would think that Michael Posner, a longtime friend of Thal, would at least glean this insight of McLuhan's from Thal the archivist in quotes, when pondering the conspiracy mania in Toronto's fringe media. No such luck. Not with Thal, anyway. Perhaps it's because Thal's bread is buttered at Torstar, stalwart bastion of the Anglo-Canadian establishment. You see, Nelson's always putting down the Anglo-Canadian establishment, all right? Pretending he's not part of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't he like the biggest, yeah.
Yeah, he's a just very strong member benefiting from the Anglo-Canadian establishment. And it's fun to watch how Marshall, how Thal doesn't take calls, how he fence sits on this issue if you press it. He doesn't want to have this called in and targeted at him. So I'm saying, since he's accusing the mainstream media being a big conspiracy, I say, well, the Torstar planted you, Nelson, in the alternative fringe media to you know, smear Bob, to cancel my legacy. He's working for the very beast that he claims he's criticizing. Okay, perhaps it's because Thal's bread is buttered at Torstar, stalwart bastion of the Anglo-Canadian establishment. Then I go, nah, they wouldn't dare run a false flag operation at 1 Yonge Street. That's the address for Torstar. I go, nah,
okay.
They wouldn't dare run a false... You know what a false flag operation is?
No, what is that?
It's 911.
I know what Yonge Street is.
Yeah, but 911, the truth movement that says 911 is a conspiracy was set up to cause, you know, national panic, and then you bring in the Patriots Bill and turn America into communism.
Yeah, I gotcha.
It's a false flag. It's like, holy shit, the terrorists bombed us, but you bombed yourself to make it look like the terrorists would cause the flag to happen. It's a false flag operation, okay? So I'm saying, what if Nelson is being propped up by the beast, by the establishment, by the bad, corrupted Israel, to smear me? And I go, nah, they wouldn't dare run a false flag operation at 1 Yonge Street! Then I go, Thal claims to be standing on the shoulders of McLuhan, but it's beginning to look more like McLuhan's feet. In other words, he's standing on McLuhan's feet. And if the rhythms of her... Which is a good line. And if the rhythms of her, I'm now I'm going to refer to Mrs. Steele, and if the rhythms of her pod talk or podcast, and if the rhythms of her pod talk are any indication, the same applies to Mrs. Jane Steele's pause, P-A-W-S. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So he's standing, so you have Nelson's feet standing on McLuhan's feet, and you have Jane Steele's pause standing on McLuhan's feet. So then I say, so if Mr. Posner would like to know why puny minds need protection and big brains roam free, give us a call. Now, do you know what that refers to? You know the famous line about conspiracies that McLuhan did? I think you, once I say it, he said, only puny secrets need protection. The big discoveries are protected by public incredulity.
Yeah, I know that one.
All right. So I'm going to use, Nelson's always quoting that. And so I'm saying that Nelson is a puny mind, and I'm the big brain roaming free because nobody can believe what I am. So that's what I mean. I say, so if Mr. Posner would like to know why puny minds need protection and big brains, meaning me, roam free, give us a call. Sincerely, Mary Corinne McLuhan, chair founder of the Marsh McLuhan Center on Global Communication, and Bob Dodds, McLuhan Archivist, Maui, Hawaii, 808-633-4036. So there is, I've written this letter with the official benediction of Mary McLuhan.
Wow.
This is a authorized letter from the Marsh McLuhan Center on Global Communication. And yet you'll find in all thought Slack, everybody says, oh, you write this and that about McLuhan. You never even, he never even heard of you. His family never even heard of you.
How they don't. They forgive them for they know not what they say.
They will burn in heaven. They will burn in heaven. And that's a very esoteric, ionic, postgraduate statement, because Ion's message and my message, we're going to have heaven on earth. And those stupid idiots who want to not have heaven on earth can go back to the old obsolete heaven in the guff.
Yeah.
So let them burn in heaven, because there is no hell. Hell was dismantled by Jesus, the third Jesus in the... I think it was the third Jesus, one of the Jesus, back, 2,000 years ago. So how's that letter? That letter got posted in response to the stupid article, and it's a profound letter and very nice.
That's well written, Bob.
Yep.
you know what you're doing. That's why I like this show.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
You know what you're doing? You do it the best. And at first I was wondering if you were flipping out there, to be honest. I was like, is he going a little nutsy? But then I realized what it was you were doing. So I got confused for a minute because I was afraid you were turning into a crank.
Yeah.
But then I realized, no, Bob's not turning into a crank. Bob knows what he's doing.
That's right.
See what I mean?
My latest email to them, August 7th, 2010, I sent the list of all the Ion stuff that we've been doing, the incredible list, including the Bible stuff. And I call it Ion/McLuhan Primer and Constant Update. So it's an Ion Primer, the background to Ion, and McLuhan, because Ion does a lot of McLuhan. Wait till you find out the importance of McLuhan for the Book of Revelation. That'll shock everybody. Ion, McLuhan Primer, and Constant Update. And I go, this is especially for you idiots, jerks, odiferous punks. So that was August 7th. That was 2 days after he had said on August 5th that I was an egomaniac.
So hey, how come they never quote our show on that information farm?
I don't think they know it, and it's not really – they're interested in Ion. I've told different people that you want to know what I think about Ion, my ruminations personal, you listen to Kurt Weller. I talk about Ion in a different way.
Yeah, cause I thought maybe it was that because it's not as this is more off the cuff, and they're a little more serious.
Yeah, well, they just want Ion stuff. As a matter of fact, we did the first three chapters of Revelations for free for information.blogspot.com. You go there, and Ed wanted to do the Revelations. We had been planning to do it for a long time, but I was reluctant. I didn't want to go into this boring Bible imagery. Wasn't interested. But Ed said, let's try it. Let's do a chapter or two. So we did it for his website. And we ended up doing three chapters. And I was so amazed at what Ion said. You can hear me near the end of the whole thing. It's for free up on Information Farms website. You hear me say, wait a minute. This stuff is too good. I'm not doing this with you, Ed, anymore. It's going to be me and Carol, and we're going to charge for it. This ain't going to be free anymore. So I did chapters 4 to 22, and I'm going to tell you about, I think I told you about 23 last week, but anyways. So what's happened is in the middle of the first three chapters, Ed, who runs Information Farm, get into an argument about me. I'm talking about McLuhan, and for some reason I bring McLuhan in because I think it's relevant to what Ion's been saying. And we're just hearing what the Bible really means, if you believe Ion, what the Bible really means for the first time, and it's pretty interesting and pretty incredible. But at one point I say, wait a minute, there's some media, there's something about McLuhan in there. I haven't reheard it. I don't know what I say. And Ed says, don't bring your crap. And we have this argument. Well, it turns out I find out that when he posted them, there is, I think the unedited version is in there somewhere, but I got to ask him where it is. But he edited out the whole McLuhan part, which I didn't care at that time because it was not so obvious whether I was right or not. But then when you get into the last few chapters, it's unbelievable how relevant McLuhan is. It's a surprise to me. It'll be a surprise to McLuhan maybe. I know Mary. I was telling Mary McLuhan the other day, and Mary says, you know what he told me once? He said, all my stuff is in the Bible. And that's incredible. He might have known what I discovered with Ion. But anyways, in the last sections, it becomes quite obvious, and Ion is a very praising of McLuhan. Up to a point, McLuhan doesn't get it all. He says, Bob, you complete the whole thing. You get it all. But the point is McLuhan's really important in the uniqueness of the Christian religion in relation to other religions. What's different about Christianity? But you have to listen to these many hours to hear that. I'm not going to spell it out. But the point is that I'm now thinking I got to go back and get Ed to show me the links to the unedited stuff, because all that stuff he edited out is now relevant in retrospect. I was right about McLuhan, even though I didn't fully know it when I first said it and didn't mind it being edited out, but I want it to be in there now. So I'm thinking of sort of offering the unedited chapters, you know, charge for them. But I don't know. If we can find them on a site someplace and they're still there, then I'll point to those. But that's why are we talking about this?
I don't know, Bob. I like
you're getting heavy. No one's ever heard this before, what Mary told me. When I was telling her about...
Well, no, that's what I was saying. That's why I was like, why is this not Information Farm? Because this is where you always announce everything.
That's right.
This is where
if you want to know...
Because I relax you. And then when you feel relaxed and it kind of comes out.
Well, any friend of Rod McEwen's a friend of mine. I find it very relaxing when I'm around the Rod McEwen devotees. No problem. But here's the thing.
Bob Dallas takes a Toronto hippie trip.
Bob Dallas claims he's the Antichrist. Okay.
I went over to Mary McLuhan's house, and she cooked some killer liverwurst sandwiches.
Yeah, Bob Dobb takes the Toronto Antichrist trip. but listen to this. This is what's incredible. I'm telling Mary about how I'm finding the importance of Marshall, because Mary will publicly, anytime I want to, announce it all over the world. She will come on board, and a couple other McLuhan associates, and they will participate in a, quote, seance with Ion and talk to Marsh McLuhan. She'll allow that to happen because she recognizes there's something amazing with Ion.
No shit. That's big.
Yeah, that's big. Well, I mean, she doesn't mind her reputation. I mean, she does a lot of big corporate stuff over the last 25 years. She had, you know, Henry Kissinger is a close friend of hers. Walter Cronkite was on her board. Anyways, all these establishing guys who wanted to be on the surface connected to the name McLuhan. So they, and then they find out, if that was their motive, they find out they like Mary, so they become a friend of Mary on the side. Anyways, the, what was I saying that? So Mary has this corporate reputation, but she's willing to be identified with Ion, because she's heard, she's had her session with Ion and talked to Marshall and Corinne and was pretty impressed with what she learned from them about her own parents, about them and her relationship with them. So she has no problem going public with that. The point is, I'm discussing to her, telling her about this incredible Bible stuff that Ion's showing us that relates to what McLuhan intuited. And she goes immediately, this is what's really good. I talk to Mary a lot, and whenever I bring up stuff like this, she always has an anecdote of something Marshall told her that she might not have understood, but then give her a context. So she immediately said, well, Marshall said to me once, all my stuff is in the Bible. Now, that's pretty interesting.
And then she gets it.
Yeah, now she gets it. Once I tell her, you know, she had no reason to say it to anybody. It didn't have a context, but I give her a context, and then she remembers it. She actually is amazed at what she remembers in talking with me, because I just bring up all these different angles that become fresh to her, and they evoke thoughts that are latent in her memory.
That's
so then
good.
I sent. Yeah, but no, the reason it's Ion that's posted. I'm involved in the dialogues. I'm the main interviewer of Ion that's in the sections on Information Farm. They're not going to feature me. As a matter of fact, I'll read you something. Before I do that, I wrote two emails on August 7th. The second one, I just listed all the Bible revelations and the prices, and I said to Nelson and his girlfriend, you two will eventually have to go through the shocking enema of studying these. So let's go on to Ed received a letter. It's over here. Ed forwards me any comments on Ion, and he forwarded this one today. Someone wrote in a note, and I know who this person is, but I won't say their name. They said, there's this other thing. Hopefully they'll get on tape. If not, we'll do it next week. She mentions this thing I'm going to mention in a minute, but here's what she says. I took your suggestion, blah, 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 and enjoyed watching it. Also, appreciated your editing of the first Revelations chapters. How about doing the others? Then she says, joking, yet your distillation into shorter and to-the-point analysis is so much better than waiting through 4 to 5 hours. I've actually fallen asleep during some of the recordings. So here's someone who doesn't like my lemon squeezing, we call it, my going through all the details, you know what I mean, and making sure we get what Ion means or what the Bible means. She finds it too digressive, and she likes the fact that Ed's edited a goddamn thing. She knows Ed has nothing to do with what we're doing now, the stuff we charge for, and so she's joking when she says, I wish you could edit the others. But that's sort of an inside joke, you know, but he can't edit them because they're mine and JW's. But here is what another person writes to me. He says, just a second here. He says, just a second. So you're going to see from this the spectrum of response. So this person writes, he says, he goes on about how good a recent chapter is, and then he says, I love the way you squeeze the lemon, Bob. Ion can be so playfully devious, it's appropriate. Send me another couple of sessions. So here's a guy praising me for doing what I do, and you have another person who doesn't like what I do. There's always that range of response to anything you do in the media, so it doesn't matter. I don't care what people think. I don't care if they like it or they don't like it. It doesn't matter. We're
That's
doing
true.
It. It's there.
Yeah. Yeah, go fuck yourself. I like that.
Both of you. I go, fuck you, my fans, and fuck you, my enemies, you know?
Yep. Fuck you and the horse you rode in on.
And I'll hang out and talk with you. Yeah, fuck you and the horse you rode in on. That's high school humor there, I think. Okay, this Kyle thing is, there's this TV show done a few years ago called Kyle XY. I don't know if I mentioned it. It's about a kid who's half, you can't tell he's either cloned or a variation of a clone, and he lives in suburban Seattle and stirs up the high school, and he's like a mini Superman growing. Okay, so what happened, I've been going through it's three seasons, so I saw the final show this weekend. Now listen to this. Does this sound familiar? The final scene is this clone guy, Kyle, fighting with the evil, the representative of the evil corporation that cloned him. And they're having a fight to the death there, and Kyle's got this guy, Mike, this Cassidy character, up against the wall. He's wringing his neck, and Cassidy has to pull out all the stops. He has to finally get Kyle to stop, or he's dead. So he reveals to Kyle who Kyle's real mother is, where the cloned material came from, so to speak, or whoever contributed the egg. He reveals the name of the mother, and then says, and when he says the name of the mother, you recognize it, it's Cassidy's last name. So then the big punchline is, so he says, Cassidy says, so Kyle, you're my brother.
Ah.
And so the series gets cut off. I don't know if they intended more to happen, but it got cut off after the third season, but it's there. It ends with Kyle strangling the guy and in a quandary whether to strangle his brother or not. Because Kyle had always...
Skywalker shit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And because Kyle was... He loved the idea of family because he was made out of a tube and just showing up at the age of 16, born at the age of 16, and didn't understand any family roots. And so he loved having this family took care of him. So family was very important. So that's why this guy nailed him. Okay, you believe in family. Well, I'm your brother, so are you going to kill me? And it's unresolvable. You know, they show it as he doesn't know what to do, and then the whole series ends. That's it. But what did I tell you last week or the week before? That's the punchline in any Western literate novel.
It is.
The family.
It is. It's always that we're related.
Yeah. Because literacy disconnects people, and they lose, they become individual talents floating free, available for any job, and lose their family ties, the tribal corporateness, which poor people in the slums, there's a heavy family loyalty. That's why you have gang warfare and all that stuff. You know,
right,
in non-literate.
The gang, it's kind of like a surrogate family.
Yeah, well, also the devotion in the fights. It's like, remember the hillbillies, the McCalls against the McGillicuddies or something, you know, that famous battle in the Appalachians. It's family loyalty.
The Hatfields and McCoys, not the McGillicuddies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's the loyalty to family. In this great TV series called The Wire, it shows the mafia guys, and it's all about family. Now, they use family, the meme, to sabotage the family members. Everybody gets killed anyways, even though they're family. If they screw up and threaten the family, they're killed. And so
right,
that's the
right,
tribal
yeah.
thing. And if you're not
it's
illiterate...
Soprano shit.
Yeah. And it's if you're not a middle-class, literate specialist, what McLuhan called a talent. When you had a specialist talent, you know, you're available, you're good at this or that, you're an accountant, a lawyer, a doctor, a cyber guy, you have some technological skill, then you can do well, and you're part of the middle class going upwardly mobile. You've got to be literate to do that, usually. But the lower classes, the poorer classes, they're not that literate. And so they don't have, if you're a specialist talent, you flow free, available to anybody, and you've got no loyalties to anybody. Not to any family, anyway.
Right. That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and the reason the mafia was able to take over America, you know, 100 years ago is that they bypassed the literate legal system. They didn't work their way into the system and rise up within the system. They went around it with the telephone, the automobile, radio, and all that electric media, which is post-literate. They used the post-literate media to maintain their oral family bonds and mafia control. And that's why they took over.
That's
the literate,
why it's so popular, probably.
Yes, because there's people many, many generations now into it, and America is becoming more and more like third world, in a sense, poor. more and more of the middle class actually lives on the lower class, and they have to struggle to get jobs and make connections. They get jobs through their friends and all that. This whole tribal loyalty took over in the economy once the money evaporated, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So the middle class has become more tribal, and that's perfect. 25 years of that leads to celebrating The Sopranos, which is just a picture of the average formerly middle-class family dropped down to poor status and then forced to that kind of loyalty. But the problem is everybody's divorced, so you got extra stress in America. It's very hard to find a family. Well, who's your family? So you might become a zombie for the union or for the corporation. You know, there's lots of complex dynamics of this, but if you get the main point, you understand why Sopranos, you know, at the end of the millennium, Sopranos is the glorious TV show celebrating the recent new American family, the tribal oral tactile family.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. Well, Bob, they're going to cut us off, I think. They only ever let us do 2 hours.
All right. Well, that's okay. So Kyle, the point is that I watched the series. It was pretty interesting. Remind me next week, talk to you about what I learned about kids and teenagers and the TV body in this series. It was pretty interesting, the pattern I got out of the dull parts. But it was incredible. I never expected my own truism to hit me that fast. The big punchline was what I could have predicted.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because we just talked about that.
Right. Okay,
I'm your father, I'm your brother, I'm your cousin.
Oh, yeah, you're Lyndon LaRouche's son. You're Lyndon LaRouche's son this week. Now, listen, Buzz has made about 8 YouTubes or more out of us. Did you see the list I gave?
Yeah, I did. I've watched about half of them. It's good stuff.
You like what he does?
I do like what he does.
And he's also, I want to send you this awesome, I don't know if it's too deep, but we're doing the McLuhan Centenary over the next while. 1911, 2011 is his 100th anniversary. So Andrew, Chris, and I are doing this incredible dialogue. I think I'll send it to you. It's on conscious mediumship and advanced McLuhan stuff. I'd be interested in your reaction because Buzz is so excited by it. He's made about 9 YouTubes out of that McLuhan thing I'm doing. So I'll send those to you.
All right, yeah. And I'll send you some Rod McEwen.
Go ahead. I'd like to hear it. I'd like to hear it.
All right. Well, so
okay.
Let's end it out with Rod McEwen digging Sausalito, and we'll be back next week, I guess.
Well, maybe in 2 weeks. It depends. We never know. You try to make it every week, but I notice that you usually can't make it every week. Something always comes up, and you.
Yeah, my schedule and stuff. So we'll try to do it next week, if not next week, the week after. And here to walk us out the door is Mr. Rod McEwen.
Yeah, we do great stuff, Kurt.
I know we do, Bob. Thanks again.
Yep. Thank you.
Take it easy.
Yep.
Every time I get torn up on Sneaky Pete, or I wind up hitching rides to Sausalito. One time, this preacher picked me up and took me over to Sally Stanford's club for a drink. Boy, it was really elegant. He had bad trouble, though. His wife was leaving him, his daughter was shacking with a married man, and his son was AWOL. I had him halfway talked into Zen when this vamp type came by and said, "Don't I know you from Chicago?" She lived on the hill and played Mabel Mercer records. And she also showed us her tattoo, a beetle flying over her navel. It was a great place, and she made damn good liverwurst sandwiches. Only, she made the preacher say a blessing before we ate them. They were getting kind of friendly, so after a while I got the pitch and took off. I dig Sausalito. When I was a kid, I used to go sailing on the Red Boat, and there was this folk singer chick I was hung on who was getting alimony from her first husband. Between her alimony and my unemployment checks, we had enough bread for steaks twice a week. No use looking her up, though. She's AC/DC now. And those kind aren't so hot.